Welcome to Ruby Riders Pegging Paradise podcast number 31 on January 14th, 2013. Tonight, first I'm going to talk about why you want to take things slow with pegging. Now, I'm not talking about the actual sliding of the strap-on into his ass, at least not at first. And, you know, you should absolutely do that slowly unless he's warmed up, but we'll get to that later. First, I'm going to talk about making that transition from being a non-pegging couple to a pegging couple. So there was a man who wrote me and that I talked about back in podcast number 27, and he got a nice probing finger in him, but it was a little bit too fast for him. He wrote me about it, and I suggested that he communicate with his partner and ask for more foreplay so that she would know what feels good to him and what doesn't. And though I'm not sure the communication happened, it seems she figured things out. Here's his update. Oh, Ruby, I'm a total convert now. She figured out what hurt and what didn't based on how I clenched or not. Also, maybe I'm getting used to a foreign body inside me. You really nailed it, no pun intended. We are learning to fuck all over again. Haven't invested in a strap-on yet. It's quite pleasurable the way it is. Sending you lots of positive vibes and hundreds of thank yous. You are so welcome, sir. And good job on taking things slowly and enjoying the journey. Too often, once the decision is made to explore pegging, you know, all of those lovely stages in between are rushed through. And probably because both of you are so excited about getting to the goal. And sometimes the man's more excited than the woman, and sometimes it's the other way around. But listen, people, you will only have the time between when you start to play around with anal exploration and when that dildo slides in your ass one time. Just once. So, just like with every partner you have, you will only have the time between meeting and having sex for the first time one time. That period only happens once. And just like, you know, dating from the meeting to the point where you actually have sex, so much pleasure can be experienced in that period. The same thing with pegging. You can have weeks and weeks of anal exploration with just fingers in combination with other types of stimulation or just fingers themselves, searching for just the right pressure and type of stroke on the prostate, learning how to open up to penetration of the fingers. She learns how to penetrate you with her fingers, the speed and the way you enjoy most. Then you can move from fingers to a handheld toy or a dildo, and you can play with that for weeks too. Think about this. If she uses a dildo in her hand and discovers using that dildo in that manner just how you like to be fucked with it, then she will have a better idea of the angle, the speed, and the depth of penetration that you love the most, which is what she would be trying to achieve when that dildo is actually strapped onto her. So can you see the learning curve here? And can you see why this stage is so important? This is why I think it's a bit of a shame when couples go from talking about it to buying the equipment and then after 5 minutes of finger foreplay, they're attempting to be off and running and expect pegging paradise, right? See what I did there? Seriously, though, I totally get why you're so excited. But why rush things, you know? Put some reins on that excitement, or if you need to, put a collar and leash on it. Take it slow. Luxuriate in the exploration of this new adventure. Just do it bit by bit. Okay, so during this exploration, what do you need? Communication, the big C. You really do need to be able to open up your mouth and talk about what you want, what feels good, what does not feel good, how something might feel a little better if it were done just a bit differently. Good communication is essential for good sex. Saying things and listening to what your partner is saying too. So for people who have some back off on that, have a little bit of shyness about communicating during sex, and there's a whole lot of you out there, and believe me, I used to be there. It was so difficult for me to open up my mouth and ask for what I wanted and talk about sex, and of course now it's it is second nature, but I wasn't always there. I was one of those people who had such a hard time opening up my mouth in bed with a partner. So if you're one of those people, it gets a little exacerbated when pegging is in the picture, because now you have something taboo and nasty and exciting and perverted in all the very best ways, right? But that makes it even more challenging for some people to talk about. But exploring the edgy sexual territories is when communication becomes even more important. Asses can be delicate, and they need to be treated with respect. Plus, you know, it's the whole thing about learning to fuck all over again because of the role reversal stuff, and all of that stuff can really mess with your head sometimes. So it's great to be able to say to your partner, "Hey, this feels awesome, babe, but I'm having a hard time with the fact that you're actually fucking me up the ass and what that might say about me." Or, "Hey, honey, I really want to fuck you with this strap-on thing, but I'm having a tough time making this work right now, and I feel awkward." Or, "If you slow down your strokes and stay deep, it would feel even better." Or maybe, "I'm tired of fucking you, but if I turn over, you could ride me." Or, "Ooh, babe, a little softer, please." "Yeah, that's perfect." Instead of leaving her to figure it out by your wincing or lack thereof, or maybe even, "Whoa, stop for a second," or, "How does that feel, honey?" All right, I'll stop now. You get the point, though? Communicate. And if it's hard for you to say things in the moment, then maybe start off your communicating with each other with a debriefing processing session afterwards, and talk about it then. What went well? What didn't go well? What totally turned you on? What maybe turned you off? What was mediocre? But I urge you, do talk about it. What I find interesting and kind of fascinating is that people will write me, just like this guy, I just read you his letter, and they'll tell me what they're thinking and what they want their partner to do, but they're not talking to their partners. Okay, and like I say, I have been where you are. I know it's difficult, and I understand that it's easy to write me. Here I am. I'm all about pegging. I'm totally accepting of your fantasies and your desires around it. I'm anonymous. I'm supportive. And your partner, there's a lot of risk there. You have a lot invested. There's more risk involved. And your partner may not be supportive. Your partner may not be into pegging at all, or maybe just getting into it. So I get all those risks, and still, I urge you, communicate. Here's my rule, people. My rule in bed is, if you can't talk about it, you shouldn't be doing it. All right, moving right along. From another reader, this man wrote me a while back, and he wanted some advice on how to get his girlfriend to peg him. I directed him to my article, "How to Convince Her to Peg You," and here's his update. "So, I actually fingered her ass the other day, and she was really enjoying it. Later, she jokingly suggested doing it to me, and I was all, 'Sure, I'll try anything once,' all the while secretly thinking, 'Oh dear God, yes!' So she stroked me and fingered my ass last night. I got lucky and didn't have to bring it up much, but thank you for the help. May have to refer to your work when I try to get her to actually peg me, but for now, things are going well." Awesome. You get, sir, you get the Taking It Slow award as well. I do recommend anal play in both directions as one of the lead-ins to pegging, but definitely realize that there are some women out there, though, who want nothing to do with having their ass played with in any manner whatsoever, but they're perfectly happy pegging their guy. So if your partner's not into receiving anal, don't despair. But like this guy's partner is totally enjoying the anal play herself, and she was the one to suggest anal play on him, so there's a win. But the taking it slow, you know, the being in the moment and enjoying all of this stuff as it's happening and not being in a rush to peg, yeah, this is awesome. So at this point, I'm going to read you a couple of things that Strap-On Jo wrote me. I have mentioned her before in my podcasts, and I'll put her link on the blog for those of you who have never heard her. Let's just say she knows of what she speaks when it comes to pegging. She did me the honor of checking out my website a while back, and she had a few suggestions. I'm going to read you two things, and she wrote her in her message to me. I totally agree with the suggestion of don't ask for the strap-on right off the bat. Start by asking for fingers. And think you could improve the page by featuring that idea more prominently and earlier in the piece. So many guys come to me because they jumped into asking for the strap-on and got turned down when they probably would have been fine if they started by asking for fingers. I did change that in my piece, and I did make a point of featuring that idea more prominently. It was an excellent suggestion, and this is right along the lines of what we're talking about tonight. Take it slow. It's so easy to want to gallop to the finish line, but you run two risks. You run missing all kinds of incredible pleasure if you have a partner who's totally down with the whole idea of getting it on with you with the strap on. But you also risk the idea of turning her off, like Strap-On Jo points out. Here's the other thing from Strap-On Jo. And I think I've read this before, but it so bears repeating. Women are like dogs in that we can smell fear. If, when you ask us to play with your ass, you are worried or nervous, we will sense it and think you're asking for something weird. If you project confidence that you're asking for something totally normal, we're more likely to agree. All right, so let's think about all this. Put it all together. If you take your time and play with fingers and enjoy moving through each of those stages I described recently, just a little while ago, if you move through these stages gradually, not only will you know so much more about how to receive that pleasure if you're the guy, how to give your partner pleasure if you're the woman, but if you're the guy, that last step of actually asking her for strap-on play really won't seem like nearly such a big deal as if you just went straight to the strap-on request. Because, I mean, think about it. Fingers feel good. Why wouldn't a toy? Toys feel good. How about a dildo? Dildos feel good. How about strapping it on? This is a logical progression here. And this is what Strap-On Jo was talking about. So guys, when you do get to the point of asking, you'll have a lot more confidence and a lot less fear because you've already explored a bunch of ass play. So it all falls into place here. And you know, I wish so much that if you took all of this stage by stage, that it was a guarantee, but I know it's not and you know it's not. It will, however, increase your odds dramatically and help you to avoid those common pitfalls like the one Strap-On Jo mentioned. So for the lesson for today is all you male listeners who are in the pre-pegging stage and in the position of wanting to convince your partner to peg you, go slow. Take your time. Enjoy the journey instead of fixating on and jumping straight to the destination. Think about that magical moment when it's like the fourth or fifth time she has slid a couple of fingers inside your ass, and she does it at just the right speed and finds your prostate straight away, making you swoon. Why would you want to miss that? You know, that's a really cool place to be in between getting that idea to begin with and eventually end up pegging. So learning to handle a strap-on is a steep learning curve for women. And she's much more likely to get frustrated and have a negative view of pegging if she's asked to learn it all at once. And as I described, knowing where the prostate is, knowing how you like to have it stimulated, these are important things that she can learn in the beginning with just fingers and toys and a handheld dildo. And if you skip that journey and the discovery, then trying to do it all at once can be overwhelming. So that's one more reason to do it slow. And I'm also going to remind you guys here, like I always do, that rocking her world sexually is really, really important. Make sure she's getting what she loves, because she's giving you something that you love. Don't make it a one-way street and want her to play with your ass every single time you get into bed because you're so excited about it. Do not neglect to give her equal pleasure, or you will definitely put her off pegging for good. Plus, that's just fucking selfish. Come on, don't do it. Okay, so the other definition of taking things slow. I wanted to mention something really specific about actual penetration right now. When you get to that point, now I'm going to use that word when with confidence because I am hoping for the best for you all. When you get to that point of actual penetration, women need to learn about how to do the actual penetration. I know it sounds kind of funny, but they really do. Because check this out. For those listeners out there who have been penetrated anally the right way by someone who knows how to give good anal sex, you know how this works. You push your cock, if you're a guy, you push your cock, or you push your toy, if you've used a strap-on before, against the rectum, and you feel that pressure of resistance. You stop right there, and you wait for the person you are fucking to relax, and you wait for their ass to allow you in. Now, this is going to be harder for women to do because we can't feel the dildo, so we really can't feel that for the same way guys can. The most common mistake that women in that moment of penetration is to keep pressing forward without pausing. What happens then is that when that anal sphincter begins to open, you've got pressure behind the dildo still, and it gets pushed in all at once, which is typically painful. Women who have received bad anal sex, because men don't get this sometimes, women know this well, which is why a lot of women have been put off anal sex for good. So I encourage both genders, go slow, slow, slow. This is why everybody says go slow, slow, slow. But I want to get really specific about it. It's not just going slow. Here's exactly what I mean. You push until you meet resistance, and that's usually when the head is going in, and you stop right there. You don't pull back, but you stop going forward. You allow the person to adjust and ideally wait until they push back against your toy or tell you verbally to go ahead. That's how to do penetration. That is how to make it really pleasurable, because you're allowing the person you're fucking the time for their body to adjust. So pay attention to that one. Whew, this pegging stuff can get complicated, right? Oh, but the rewards, holy shit. That's why you're all here, I know. I mean, hey, that's why I'm here. Just think of me as your provocative and passionate pathfinder to pegging paradise. Damn, I love alliteration, don't I? Okay, so moving right along. We hear back from the Dom again. You know, the one who thought she was done but found out she couldn't just walk away from her desires just because she was a certain age. She has favored us with a description of what she enjoys. Because I think I mentioned last time that if she was in the market for a new boy toy, you know, there's probably a lot of listeners out there. Who knows? Stranger things have happened. It could be the first matchup on Pegging Paradise. So she wrote me, and here's what she had to say. I think you're going to enjoy this, especially if you're into a little bit of the dominance and submission stuff. Okay. As a domina, I am not so much into pain, but prefer being on top and always getting my way. However, there are lots of different ways to engage in ass play besides using a strap-on. I have a close friend who is also very dominant. We love getting together for playtime, and we have a few games that we like to use as foreplay. Our pet slave is the evening's entertainment. Slaves like to be the center of attention, so it is in their best interest to be cooperative at all times. We ladies like to sip pure scotch over 3 ice cubes in an old-fashioned glass. Our slave knows not to dilute the fine taste of good scotch with water. He wore a leather collar and cuffs while with us. Otherwise, he'd be naked without them. He can stand or sit at our feet, but he's not allowed to sit on the furniture with us. A great way to start the evening is with a good drinking game. Our pet is positioned, leaning against the back of my large reclining chair. His legs are spread and his ass is pushed out towards us. Next, my friend and I get out lots of clothespins. Here is where you have to gauge your slave's tolerance. Wooden clothespins are quite severe and leave wonderful little ridge pinch marks. Plastic ones are gentler. We totally cover the slave's ass with clothespins and then place some up and down his flanks, then more on his thighs, and wherever we can get a good bite on the skin. The object of the game is to remove as many pegs from the submissive's body by striking them with thin, 4-foot-long dressage whips. The slave doesn't get whipped. The clothespins do. We take turns with my friend, she is my guest, getting the first cut, and I follow. Whoever manages to remove the most with the strike of the whip gets a nice sip of scotch. We continue to take turns until either the drinks or the clothespins are gone. After our game, our slave will be covered in beautiful red pinch marks. We take pity on him and rub his sore places with ice from our glasses. When our fingers get cold, we push the pieces of ice up his hot, tight ass. Nothing will make a slave forget about whip marks or any other physical discomfort than the feel of ice melting inside him. We continue with the ice treatment until the cubes from our glasses are gone. By then, we've usually thought of some other way to amuse ourselves. As you can tell from this letter, my sexual preferences are set and I know what I like. My sub must never forget that he is mine, my plaything, my favorite toy, my slave, my pet, my most precious and valued possession. Whatever my present mood calls for, he knows that he is mine to do with as I wish. I have just today put a profile at FetLife under the name De Amoureux, which was the only name available after 20 tries. I am located in Western Canada and have moved away from the kinky lifestyle, so it may take a while to get back in the groove. I am very careful who I choose for my submissive. A lot of men just want a 1-hour thrill, and I definitely want to know them before I go further into any scene. There are things that make life better, such as caring, affection, closeness. Things that a professional dominatrix isn't interested in, but a real lifestyle dominant is. Sincerity and attitude is important. I tend to be a lone wolf and enjoy time by myself. I realize that my tastes aren't for everyone, but I'm not prepared to compromise. Many subs approach a domina with a preconceived fantasy in mind. I am not the woman for them. A good sub is expected to make his mistress look good and satisfy her fantasies. Life is too short to spend time with someone who constantly wants to test limits or have things his way. So, that is most of what she wrote me. I left a few details out that I thought were better saved and not read on the podcast. But thank you so much for that. And let's see, there's 2 things I know everyone's going to want to know. For all you men out there in the general vicinity of Vancouver, Canada, who are interested in contacting this wild woman, you can find her on FetLife with the screen name of DEUX_AMOUREUX. De Amoureux. There are even a couple of photos of the lovely lady who thought that she was done with kink, and she is lovely, I must say. So that has been a wonderful and wild adventure, and I think I've made a good friend up in Canada. Who knows, I may even visit sometime, because I'd kind of like to play that game with you, quite honestly. I really would. That is right up my alley. I've done the ice thing before, and it was really fun. Okay, switching channels just a bit. I'm going to talk a little bit about toxic toys once again. You may recall in podcast 14, I had just come back from CatalystCon West, and I talked all about toxic toys, because I got to meet someone I'd been following for years, Jennifer Pritchett. She's one of the experts teaching the class that I took on toxic toys there. And she's also one of the owners of Smitten Kitten in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And she's one of the pioneers of spreading the word about toxic sex toys. I will never forget when someone brought up the idea of just covering a toxic toy with a condom and intimating that it would protect the user from the toxic chemicals. And Jennifer jumped on that assertion and said there was absolutely no proof that that was true. And in podcast 14, I talked a little bit about the difference between inert and active, which is a new concept that she talked to me about as well in that class. Inert is like silicone. That means that that substance is not reactive with anything around it. An active substance is just like toxic sex toys. If anybody's ever owned toxic sex toys, like the jelly things, you know that it reacts to things around it. People have found out when their toxic toys melt together in a big disgusting pile of goo or mold itself to another one of your premium toys. That's an active substance. It will react to things around it. So, given those two definitions, get this and remember this, people. Latex is an active material. It is not an inert one. So why wouldn't it react with the toxic toys? Why wouldn't it? And why would that then not allow those toxins to come through the condom into your body? So, with that lead in, here you go. One man wrote me, and his personal experience really seems to bear this out. Here's his letter. I've been listening to your podcasts and look forward to each new one being released. I've gotten my girlfriend listening to them as well when we take a trip together. We're both into anal play, and although she has not pegged me yet, lots of anal play has been accomplished. I want to thank you so much for your stance on toxic toys. I am very sensitive to much of the chemicals present in cheap toys and have tried everything I know to get rid of the sensations. None of my methods worked, and finally, I've resorted to opening each new package toy to give it a sniff test, even though the package stated that it was 100% phthalate-free. Sometimes I still had a reaction. Well, after listening to podcast 14, I know now that the label can say whatever the distributor wants it to say. I'd actually learned about the nastiness of the chemicals used in toys many years ago, but now it's getting much more press thanks to groups like yours. And here's what I wrote this man back. Thank you so much for your message. I really enjoy receiving messages like yours that let me know I've been helpful to someone in their quest to have a happy, healthy sex life. The toxic toy issue is particularly insidious. It continues to appall me that the labeling can be total lies. On the other hand, I'd rather work towards consumer awareness than have sex toys be regulated by the government. I have a question for you, if you don't mind. You mentioned that you tried many things to remedy the toxic toy problem. Did you try a condom over the toy at any point? And if you did, was it to any degree successful in reducing the reaction? The reason I ask is because many sellers of toxic toys say just use a condom on it, but there is actually no evidence that a condom will protect you at this point. So I was wondering if you have any anecdotal evidence one way or the other. And here's what he wrote back. I'm so happy you asked that question. I have used condoms on the toys I had problems with, and these are the ones that have a very strong chemical smell right out of the package. A condom, standard latex, will stop the bad sensations for maybe 5 to 7 minutes. Then the bad sensations are just as bad as without the condom. I figured it was because the chemical that was causing the problem was leaching through the condom. After listening to one of your podcasts, now I know that condoms are not 100% non-reactive, as in silicone. It just slows down the issue. When I said that I tried everything to drive out the chemical smell, that includes soaking the toys in bleach solution, soaking them in baking soda bath, and even going so far as heating the toy in the oven, starting at 150 degrees and leaving it there for several hours. I upped the temp to 200, and nothing I did seemed to have any positive effects. I then learned to open any toy I bought, or rather was considering buying, to give it the sniff test. The nose is very sensitive to those chemicals. Now, of course, I try to only buy silicone, glass, or steel toys. But still, some toys of the type that my partner and I enjoy are not made of these safe materials. I have talked to Metis Black, and this would be the owner of Tantus Toys, several years ago, and think I may contact her again to see if she takes input on toy designs so that I can once and for all get rid of the last of my questionable toys. So this was a really interesting back and forth with this man, and it really took me back to that moment when Jennifer Pritchett asserted that no, nobody has shown that it is safe to put a condom over a toxic toy and all of a sudden it's great. That's not true. And I hadn't really ever thought about it. I guess I just assumed that, just put a condom on it. So it kind of shocked me in that moment, and it also shocked me that I hadn't that I took it for truth. Why would I? So to get this letter from this man and question him and hear his experience really seems to lend quite a bit of truth to Jennifer doubting that this is true. So here's the takeaway from all this, okay? Please lose those toxic toys. They are not safe. I don't care how cheap they are. Chemicals are going to leach into your body. Condoms, it seems, from this man's story, will not protect you 100%. Okay, I make this assertion, and there's going to be people out there that say, no, I use a condom and I don't react to it at all. Listen really carefully here. You may not have a noticeable reaction to the toy with a condom over it, but that does not mean that those chemicals are not leaching into your body. It may just mean you are not as sensitive to the chemicals as this man is, so you're not having any symptoms. Difference between no symptoms and no effect is a big difference. It's huge. The chemicals? Yeah, these are the ones they have already identified as toxic and banned from children's toys. They're called phthalates, which is why people who are savvy to any part of this are looking for toys with labels that say phthalate free. And once again, if the label says it, unless it is from a trusted company that you know is dedicated to making safe toys, you cannot trust that label. And if it says phthalate free and it was made in China, walk away. Totally walk away. No guarantee there at all. So some time ago, I think it was in 2006, Jennifer Pritchett actually took 4 different sex toys to a lab and had them analyzed. And the results will blow you away. The link will be up on my blog for it so you can take a look at it, because these results are absolutely posted on the internet. The toy, the manufacturer, and the lab results. And of course, these manufacturers were not at all happy about this. So there are a number of different types of phthalates. And with just a bit of research that I did tonight to do this podcast to discover which were which, I found the Consumer Product Safety Commission. And I found this information. There are 6 types of phthalates that have been banned from children's toys. 3 of them have been banned permanently, and the definition with those 3 of a children's toy, it's just defined as something that is a product intended by the manufacturer for a child who is 12 years old or younger for use by the child when the child plays. And then there is a category of three other ones that have been banned, and it says on an interim basis. So for the banned for now, pending a commission that's investigating all this. And these three have to do with toys that can be placed in children's mouths. And that's a toy that can be placed in the children's mouth is defined as any part of a toy that actually can be brought to the child's mouth and kept there so that it can be sucked on or chewed on. This is for little kids. And so they define that as if a toy or a part of the toy is smaller than 5 centimeters, it can be placed in the mouth. So 3 for that category and 3 for the one that sounds like it's kind of for older kids. So I took a look at what these substances were, and there's all kinds of acronyms because these are long chemical names, and I'm not a chemist. I don't really know much about things like this. So this is a whole discovery process that I find out. But, you know, it took me 10 minutes to look this up, and here's what I found out. These acronyms that they're using and these big, long chemical names that always end in phthalate, because that's what we're talking about here, I went back and compared which of these were present in the reports, the lab reports from the sex toys that Jennifer Pritchett took to the lab and had analyzed. Now, in both of these categories, each of the three for the older kids and then the ones for the mouth, right? Congress has banned those phthalates in both of these groups in any amount greater than 0.1%, okay? 0.1%. If you take a look at the lab reports, the highest percentage of phthalates comes from a toy that was analyzed to have, are you ready? 53% phthalates. And the substance that composed that 53% was one of the ones that was permanently banned for the older kids. It blew my mind. Wow. Okay, so they're saying not safe for kids to play with. They're also saying certainly not safe for kids to suck on or chew on, right? And you want to take these things and you want to put them inside you? I don't even care what orifice you're using. I don't even care. Wow. That's awful to even consider. So, you know, once again, I'm blown away. And once again, I felt compelled to talk to you guys about this because this is so important. You really need to share this information with all of your sex positive, sex toy positive friends. Certainly with your partner, that's for sure. So I'm going to put the two links up there. One is from the lab reports, and that is an organization that Jennifer started called badvibes.org. It's called The Truth About What's in Your Sex Toys. And the other is the Consumer Product Safety Commission that talks about exactly this. I actually delved into this a little bit more, and what I tried to do is it does say that there is a chronic hazards and advisory panel on phthalates. As much as I can tell without spending a lot of time on it, they're still kind of involved in defining what this report is going to be comprised of and telling whatever scientists are going to be doing this exactly how they want it done is kind of what it looks like to me, which I suppose is another way of saying they're still just freaking talking about it instead of doing anything. So it'll be nice when they do get around to doing something. I still maintain that even if they do find out that these things are totally awful and disgusting and not good, and they're talking about being endocrine disruptors and all of this stuff, that we do not want the government regulating our sex toys. So let's work really hard at spreading the word and talking to our friends. And, you know, sometimes I get approaches from people, because of my website, I get approaches from people who want to advertise on my website or want me to be an associate and have advertising for them on there. And the very first thing I do is I go and I look at what they sell. And if they have any kind of toxic toys whatsoever, I immediately write them back and say, you sell these horrible toxic toys. There's no way I would associate myself with a company who sells those things. And, you know, so far I've managed to avoid any kind of advertising on my website at all, and that feels good. I mean, eventually there might be a few things up there, but I'm taking that slow, and I'm being really picky, because this is really important. I don't want to be associated with a company that will sell those things just because it'll make them money. One of the things that I have said in the greater sense of all of this, as opposed to just thinking about sex, is that it just dismays me how often big corporations, big companies, will make a decision that is not healthy for their consumers, that is not healthy for the world or the environment, because of the bottom dollar. And in my mind, that's exactly what the retailers are doing, and the manufacturers that make these horrible toys. They don't care. They are selling it to make money. They don't care if it's bad for people. They don't feel like they have to warn people. Some of them feel like they can lie on their labels. I don't want to have anything to do with that. Well, that's not true. I do want to have something to do with it. I want to expose these people. I want to talk about how bad they are, which is obviously what I'm doing. I am bending your ear. And I hope I've bent it enough to where you're inspired to go talk to other people about it. You know, find your kinky friends. Tell them about it. You know, write it in the blog that you have that's anonymous, that, you know, if you don't want to go talking about sex toys to your friends. But spread the word, because it's really important. It's just as important, if not more, as far as the difference between organic vegetables and regular, or whatever, you know, passion you have about staying healthy. This is an important one. If you are into sex toys at all, this is way important. Okay, I think I'm done now. And this is kind of a long podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. I totally, finally have my voice completely back to normal. I'm feeling really good. I'm working out at the gym again, and I am through the holiday wild sickness transition to the new year thing, and I'm so glad to be done with that. I hope you all are having a amazing beginning of 2013. And this is a time when a whole bunch of people are making resolutions, or perhaps have already made them and are trying to keep them. So here are Ruby Ryder's New Year's resolutions for 2013. This year, my goal is to help as many people as I can to discover the joys of pegging, to work towards sex positive attitudes in all walks of life at every opportunity I'm given, to spread the word about toxic toys. Aha, got a good start on that one, didn't I? And last, but far, far from least, to find a guy to do some product testing with. Now, obviously, that is not the only reason I would like to find a guy. But I am being given some opportunities to do product testing. And you can't do a lot of product testing if you don't have anybody to test with. And I don't really want to put that on my profile on OkCupid. I don't think that that's really a good idea, but all right, I'll stop right there. Hope I gave you a laugh. I certainly gave myself one. Okay, you can follow me on Twitter at Ruby_Ryder. I have a profile on Facebook, and I also have a page that you can like with the little thumbs up. You can subscribe to my blog, and my podcast is available on iTunes as well as right directly from my blog. Please send your questions and your stories to ruby@peggingparadise.com. Some of you may have been waiting for the happy dance and for the pegging success stories, and we had so much other material to cover that I didn't fit it in, but I could use some more success stories too, so please feel free to send them in. They don't have to be long, eloquent missives. They can be just a little note to say, "Weeha, we went for it and it was awesome." Whatever you like. Thank you for downloading and listening. Have a great week, everybody. And as always, happy pegging.